Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Abracadabra, Create What You Speak, with Ilan Azulay, only on LA Talk Radio.
Shalom, welcome. What happens in you when you laugh? When you squeeze your belly muscles, rushing blood to your cheeks, rising from below to above? Rising from the lowest places you've ever felt, so powerless to soar over the cliff. Do you feel the gushing of all that you've held back, just bursting out with tears? Joy. Tears that embrace all that you were, are, and yet to be. All that in you and out of you. Omitting sound that trembles your outer and inner limits, sending your essence flying through all your fears, all your doubts of becoming, all your dreams in love. And here you are. You are here, standing, soaring. You are you. הריני מקבל על עצמי את מצוות עשה של ואהבת לרעך כמוך. I hereby accept to myself the due commandment or the utterance of love your friend, your neighbor, your gardener, your partner, in the same way that you express love to yourself, where the first focus is yourself. Hello, welcome. Wonderful Sunday. My name is Ilan Azulay. You're here. This is the Abracadabra Create What You Speak. I'm your host, a spiritual mentor and a sound therapist for you who are ready to reclaim your power. I'm excited to have here a wonderful guest, comedian, actress, singer, Caroline Langford. Hello, Caroline.
Hello, and I was just listening to what you were saying before about laughter. I never thought about it that way. And now when I'm going to look at the audience, I'm just going to imagine all those words you said about bringing that laughter through. It's wonderful.
Oh, thank God. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, this is, it's fun. You know, it's funny. You know, when we look at everything, how things are and how they manifest and how they go through, and then when we cross the journey, it's funny, not in the funny sense of, in the idiomatic sense of like, ha, 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 it made a joke. But funny how things are connected and we're actually laughing about our, at that time, inability to see the map.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always felt that there's a choice of how to look at things, and I can either look at things in a painful way or I can look at the same painful thing in a funny way.
In a funny way.
And it's almost therapy when you change your attitude and suddenly it's not serious anymore.
You know why it's not completely therapy?
Why?
Because there is the word almost.
Almost, yes.
You know, it's like when you say, I'm trying to do this, you're actually not
doing
it.
All right, let me rephrase that.
I'm just
kidding.
It's
bloody therapy, okay?
This is great. Caroline, you know, I know Caroline. This is the first time I meet you. I met her in person, and if you're watching this and you're Israeli and you were born in the, I don't know, you're just Israeli. You know who Caroline Langford is, in the movies. And but let's start the other a little bit kind of chronologically, right?
Okay.
So you're from England originally.
Born in England, but my parents sort of schlepped me all over the world.
Yeah, eventually landing in Israel.
Yeah, we went to Australia for a couple of years. We went back to England, then we went again to Australia. And from Australia at age 14, I came to Israel.
Oh, wow.
That was
and
tough.
It was tough because at that age, you know, at that age, you still don't know even to ask the question of who you are.
But
suddenly everything is changing again.
Believe it or not, as a little girl, I was a painfully shy child. And I was always the new girl in school, because not only did we move countries, it's every half year to a year we moved wherever. So I was always that new girl.
And that was because of your parents'
my
work?
My parents, yeah. My father was in show business, so he went where the work was.
Barry Langford.
Barry,
right?
Langford, yeah. And so being the shy girl, I learned that I better say something, because when I finally got over my shyness, it was time to leave. But the problem was, when we would go to Australia, like we went to Australia, I had the English accent. They made fun of me. Got back to England, I had an Australian accent.
They made fun of you there.
Back to Australia, blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly to Israel, where it wasn't just an accent. Now it's another language I couldn't understand.
And the culture.
Yes, so I wasn't very happy back then. As it became an angry teenager because of it.
So do you feel that that the path you chose, knowingly or unknowingly, was an escape, or kind of an escape from the life that you knew, to channel everything in it?
It wasn't also easy growing up in my family. I had a very a very talented father, but very narcissistic father, and it was always about him, never about the kids. So that it caused quite a lot of, you know, damage, I think, in me, which gave me that need to go and to perform and be on stage, and getting the attention that I didn't get as a child. You know, and it became like a drug. Like, you were on stage and you get the applause or you get the laughter.
Does your perception about receiving that attention shifted over the years? So, for example, you started to say, I wanted the attention for whatever reason, and then it shifted why you're on the stage.
Well, no, it became just, like I said, like a drug. Like, the more,
just like,
I mean, I've been doing it now for many, many years. I can tell you what my husband says about me. When I work, I'm alive. And when I don't, I exist.
Yeah, wow, that's a good one. Yeah, that's a good
one.
It's
so true.
It is.
It gets me up in the morning. It gives me that reason to keep going. And therefore, that's why age is just a number. I'm not like, I mean, I'm in an age where people that I know are all slowing down and I'm just speeding up.
But is it, here's the question I have. But is it, you say it gives you a reason to get up in the morning, you are driven to do that, you love doing it.
Yes.
The question is it really, I see the acting or this as the channel to deliver that which you want to experience, right?
Yes.
So is it to the acting or to that, could you receive that in a different place, that feeling?
I have done quite a lot of things in my life.
Yeah.
Shall we say, also not show business, that have given me pleasure, but they haven't given me that, what shall I call it, that high. That's why I said before, it's like a drug.
You feel your essence. That is the thing. It's you feel your flame, right?
Yes.
It's coming from a place, a really deep place. You know?
At the same time, though, because, for instance, now that I do stand-up comedy, that is a double-edged sword, because you could have a show that doesn't do well one night and you're not getting the laughs, and you go home feeling absolutely as low as can be. So it defeated that purpose. But when you have a show where everyone's laughing, there's no better feeling for me in the world.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm playing now in this, and I think, did I tell you?
Yes, you are, yes.
Mevaker Amdina. So it's a show, tonight is the last show here in LA, and I haven't been on a stage like that, in that capacity, for more than, since I haven't been in Israel, right?
Yes.
So like 20-something years. I've been doing music and stuff, but not in an acting form. And I can feel what you're talking about. And I love your articulation, your language articulation, because it really it's an art to bring feeling to words, to language, and to describe them, that you can feel that feeling as you hear that word.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, that's very true.
Yeah, you know, I have to confess.
Please,
I have
do.
A confession.
Please do, my son. Confess away.
So growing up, I remember, I think it was your first film, right? Melech Leom Echad.
Yes.
King for One Day. I don't know why they called it in English Crazy Dad.
Because no, that's another movie entirely, Crazy Dad. That's Shigeon Shelab.
Oh, that's a Shigeon Shelab. So that was the second one after?
No, that was already, I think, maybe the fourth.
The fourth one. It? Was the first one Melech Leom Echad?
Well, I did two in the beginning, but for the first time. So it was Melech Leom Echad, King for a Day. And I also did a candid camera movie.
Oh, that's right. With Yehuda Barkan.
Yes.
Right. And so...
Which movie are you talking
I'm
about?
I'm talking about The King of for One Day.
A King of a Day.
King of a Day.
King for a Day.
King yes. for a Day.
Yes.
And it's so amazing how, you know, how deep this movie, I can look at it today and see the deep connotation, the meaning. I don't know if did Asi write this?
Yes.
Yes, right?
And that's where I met him.
Yes.
He directed it.
Yes. So Asi Dayan was your late husband?
Yes.
Ex-husband?
Yes, my first.
Your first. And... So the confession is that I had a complete crush on you throughout my teenage years.
Completely. <that's sweet.
laughs> Completely. From beginning with that movie. And then after a while, you know, we grow up and you did other things. I did. But I remember that. So that movie was. And so I want to play for you, which you already know because. But this is the... this is where I remember seeing you with the guitar sitting on the edge of the Dead Sea where there was more water at that time. And yeah, I'm coming back to you, so I want to play that when you're sitting here.
Okay.
This was an experience, and so you just talk to me a little bit about that's where you met your husband at that
yes.
time, the
yes,
director,
yes,
Asi Dayan,
right,
and you had with him Leo,
yes, my son Leo, who today yeah. is doing very well in his own career, as a writer.
And where does he live here or in Israel?
No, no, he lives in Israel.
Okay. Yes. Oh, in Israel?
Yes.
Oh,
yes. Cool.
And so I read that there was a time where you gave Lior for adoption.
Well, first of all, I will correct you. The word was not adoption.
That's what they read in the Jewish...
Yeah, that's what they write in Hebrew, and it's not.
No, in English they wrote it.
Even they wrote it in English. Well, it's wrong because he was not adopted.
Okay.
A very, very low period in my life. I had, which I didn't know, and nor did anybody at the time, postpartum depression.
Yes, yes, yeah.
I only realized it years later. And I was also married into, shall we say, the most famous family in the country, the Diane family. As he was not the most stable at the time either, and he had a drug problem, and I could not function. So it was suggested that Lior go temporary to a kibbutz, and he got what's called... kibbutz parents.
Yes.
So, for lack of a better word, we can say foster parents.
Oh, they should have just said that.
And they never did. So, you know, I became the wicked witch of the Middle East, basically, because I was in the land of the Jewish mother.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in my head was the whole time, what is wrong with me? Mm-hmm. Why? Because the feeling... is you go numb. You have no feelings.
Yeah.
And I really, as much as I was told I was a monster, I believed it. Now, today, many, many years later, he's 36 years of age, this was a sickness that I had. And the sad part is that there is treatment for it. And, you know, it would have been a few months treatment and I would have had my son. I got him back when he was 14.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I visited him all the time.
14, you 14 shifted your life, right?
Yes.
How's this karmic connection, right?
Yes.
Amazing.
And you know, I'm happy to say today it's a wonderful relationship.
Oh, thank God, wonderful.
And I have a daughter from my second husband, which I didn't get postpartum depression. You know, I don't think anyone in Israel realized I did. Raise another child, you know, a very spiritual hippie daughter I have who's 24 years of age, and she is, I say she floats, you know, she's just pure love. And
that's wonderful.
Vegan and...
you know, this is the new generation. It is. You know, we are the shamans of the world.
Yes.
You know, we are coming from one leg in the old world, one leg in the new world. And the children are born already evolved.
I would say, and everyone would tell me such, she was never a child.
Hmm.
She had a maturity. I mean, also the way I raised her, which I'm a very laid-back mum, and it's, you know, I let her make her own choices and probably gave her that love of animals, you know, because now it's extreme with her. She's, you know, vegan and... everything is for the planet, for the animals, and I'm very proud. I'm very proud of both my kids, to be honest.
That's wonderful.
So you see, I did become the Jewish mother in the end.
Yeah, maybe you always were the Jewish mother.
I probably was. I wasn't well.
Well, you know, this is the thing and I tie many times the subject that I talk about or that I bring into also the weekly portion.
Yes.
Of the Torah, right? But here's the thing that correlates to the last weekly portion, that when we are, many times when we're in a place of crisis, right, we are in this movie within a movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and we are in this place, we cannot see really
what is beyond that
frame that we put ourselves in. You know, whether it is survival, whether it is they did to me, they did this, they did that. We cannot see beyond that. And this is like a frame in a film, this entire experience that we are in life. That's why also we say, oh, how time flies, right? It's just a frame in this entire movie.
That's absolutely true.
And so... When did the time come for you where you had this? This shift, this understanding, this realization that hey, there is.
I did have that, yeah. But that was many years later because again I fell down. I got up. I fell down. I got up. I fell down, and I remember thinking, how do I have the strength to get up again? I can't get up again. But of course I did. On a second failed marriage and starting again. Mm. And things happened that suddenly I was in a very low place again. Mm-hmm. But a person came out of the blue. Mm. And suddenly I could see the light. And from that moment onwards, when I had that hope, there was like a slight little bit of hope there. Everything changed for the better. And, you know, thank goodness that was 20 years ago. And
and since then you are with that out of the blue person.
No. The out of the blue, in fact, happened to be my father's second wife who he had divorced. But she came with a handout, which changed everything for me. Mm. Yes, and so I can say for 20 years, I've been smiling.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes.
And for the rest of whatever experience we have here.
And you know what's interesting? Because when I told you I was a painfully shy little girl, my nickname was Smiler. Because I'd smile all the time because I was so shy. I'd just smile. And I just realized I'm saying, and for the last 20 years, I've been smiling. I'm Smiler again, but not out of shyness.
You know, when we smile, actually, the muscles release dopamine to our brain. Is it dopamine? Yeah.
Well, then I'm getting a lot of dopamine.
You're getting a lot of that.
Yes.
You're constant high.
Yes.
So you are in. How long are you in LA?
14 years.
14
almost,
years.
Yes.
What brought you here?
Well, I was in New York first.
Okay.
And I suffer from depression with gray skies. It's called SAD. SAD.
Uh-huh.
Where I could never live back in England. Forget it. You know, I need blue sky.
Yeah.
And so that was primarily the reason I moved to Los Angeles, for the weather.
Mm. Why not to Israel? Is this too many memories?
Well, no, I'd come from Israel to marry my third husband.
Yeah, yeah.
And
but you decided to stay here.
He couldn't be in Israel, even though he is Israeli, work-wise.
Okay.
So Los Angeles, and I do love it. And there's so many Israelis here.
Yeah,
all my like friends are Israeli. It's like little Israel here.
It is kind of.
Yes, yeah. It is. You know, you've got the Israeli supermarkets.
Yeah, you got everything.
Know, I've got a wonderful friend, a Moroccan friend, who's a great cook, and she's always feeding me Israeli
yeah,
food.
Yeah, that's
it's
good.
Wonderful. The only thing I don't like is that the flight to Israel is
15 hours.
Oh,
yeah.
That is horrendous. And I do it 2-3 times a year.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I know that. Yeah, I used to do like 4 or 5 times a year.
Oh, you do more than me.
No, I did. I used to do it when
gosh,
I was for a few years. Yeah,
and the jet lag. It's not just the flight.
That's
it's
right.
The jet lag.
That's
and as
right.
you get older, it gets worse every flight. I had filming in Israel, and I thought, I have to go there like 4 days before. I can't just like arrive and film like I could
that's
when I was
right,
20.
That's right.
You know,
that's right. Yeah, you get to recoup. You get to readjust. Yeah, it's a whole. So what are you doing? So today you're playing here in LA. Where else are you playing?
Well, here in LA, I do stand up comedy.
Yes,
which I actually adore. Only when it goes well, of course. I'm happy to say most of the time it does. They love my British accent. It's a plus in America.
No, is your audience mostly American? You do it in English, I assume?
I do it in English. I've done it a few times in Hebrew. That was challenging. But
challenging because of the accent or because of the audience?
No, well, that too. Let me just say about Israeli audience when it comes to stand-up. They think it's a conversation.
Oh, yes.
They think, you know, you're just giving your set-up line and they're going, yeah, yeah, me too, you know. Let me get to the punch, you know. But it's very laid back, you know. But no, I was doing it in Hebrew, and I still make a lot of mistakes in Hebrew. No, so my audiences are American, And but they love the British accent.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, one time I sort of it wasn't on stage. I was off stage, and I said a dirty word, and I said, "Oh, sorry." And she said, "Honey, when you Brits curse, you sound like Shakespeare." So I thought, I can get away with
You do sound like Shakespeare.
Yeah. And so that helps. But, you know, and you constantly are writing new material all the time.
So do you have a schedule? Do you go back and you put yourself, or do you say when it comes, it comes?
No, it's when it comes. And it always comes, for some reason, in the shower. So I feel like I might be the reason there's a drought in California. I need material. I got a shower.
There she is. There she is.
And I was actually thinking about, why do my ideas come to me in the shower?
Huh.
And I do have a theory.
Please share.
Okay. Besides the fact we can say going back to the womb and all that. No. I'm very ADD.
Okay.
My brain's going like, I've talked to you and I'm thinking of this. Mm-hmm. This. Mm-hmm. When I'm in the shower, I can't check my emails. I can't, you know, do anything except have a shower. And I think that is why I can think. You know, I'm focused in the shower. I don't go in the shower and go think of new material. It just
happens.
Comes.
Yeah.
Yes, a shower or a bath.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. It happens the same thing. And I'm thinking, well, no wonder King Solomon, you know, it's like.
Yes. And, you know, and then you have to go and try it out, do a lot of open mics, try them out.
When did you start actually going on stage as a stand-up comedian?
Only 2 years ago.
Really?
Yes.
So what we do? So when you were going on stage before that,
I've done quite a lot of.
It was
theater.
It was like a.
I've done theater in LA. I did theater in New York. Theater in LA.
Okay, so 2 years in stand-up comedy. Wow. Okay, so that's cool. So, tell me about the first time.
I think.
Did you have
I'll
like a
what,
test audience or something?
No. What happened was I had a big birthday, shall we say, and I thought. I was, you know, thinking, oh, my God, look at this age and this and that. And then I suddenly went, you know what? Screw it. I'm at a stage where I don't give a damn. I've got a lot to say. And I went and tried it out, and they were laughing, which encouraged me. You know, I've basically taken all the low parts in my life, and I'm laughing at them.
This is wonderful.
Yeah, and that's when I said therapy. because once you get it out there, it's suddenly not so, it doesn't hurt you anymore.
Do you try and go and analyze things as far as, oh, and I'm not talking about judging, because many times the tendency of people are to look at what happened 40 years ago with the eyes of today. Then you're automatically judging yourself. But it's to bring yourself, yeah.
Exactly. And also, I think it's just, you know, what was painful inside of me that I didn't want to talk about, and then I turned it around into humor. Well, it's not painful anymore. I mean, my father, I do a lot on him, and things that really hurt me, but they don't hurt me anymore because now it's a joke.
So it's a joke. So do you not think of these situations anymore in a similar way that you've been thinking about them? Up until now, because now you put them on them.
Yeah, far, far less. Uh-huh. That they're out there, and I'm laughing at it. So it's not that same pain that I carried around for years.
That is wonderful, because there are also practices of laughing yogas. And,
that's right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is for me a quick way. Look, I did therapy for years. This is a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Plus, I don't have to pay the. Therapist, I get paid, so it's a win-win
situation. It's a win-win situation.
No, so thank goodness I had all. No, but I also say thank goodness I had all that I had, because it made me who I am now.
Yeah.
You know, you say things like, "Oh, if there was a time machine, I'd go back and do it all differently." No, I wouldn't, because then I wouldn't have my kids, and I wouldn't have.
You would have other things.
Exactly.
It'd just be something different, something that is not here, you know, and it's like, It's like what, it's like in the old days in Israel, at least, we used to buy a shoe or something, and then we go around town to see if we got the best deal.
Yes.
What difference does it make? I'm going to take it back.
I know people like that even today.
Oh, really?
I know someone, and this doesn't make any logical sense. He would drive 40 miles to a gas station where it's cheaper.
But he spent it back driving.
Well, exactly. I mean, there's actually no logic, but it makes him happy because he got a bargain.
That's right.
For him. You know, everything, I think, of all these things, it's all about control. And when we, so if we control, like I admit to it, I am a major germphobe.
No.
Yes, and I've got worse over the years because of all the knowledge on the internet.
Yeah.
So for me to fly, I have to disinfect like everything in my area. And it is control, but I cannot fly unless the seatbelt, the screen, you name it, the window thing there.
So what are you afraid of if you don't do that, what would happen?
Oh, diseases and germs and...
Did it happen before?
No, first of all, my father was what we call a raging hypochondriac. He seemed to have every disease. He never had anything. I mean, according to him, he had rabies, the plague, and he was pregnant. You know, I mean, but, you know, I was raised by that. And then I've always had a thing about germs, and it just gets worse and worse. So that control of me... You know, disinfecting. In fact, it's actually, I've been reading a lot about it. I'm doing something very clever because, you know, you fly on a plane, you, especially now with what's happening on the news, you know, with the coronavirus.
Oh, that.
Yeah, I mean, it can be the next pandemic, you know. So I don't like shaking hands, which is a problem sometimes.
Mm-hmm. That's a better way to give a hug.
Well, I do. You know? I usually have. But there's times you can't hug the person.
I know.
And you have to shake their hand. But, you know, but I know it's all about control.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm aware of it, but I still need to do it.
Hmm.
And there's many people like me. I'm not alone.
I don't think it has to do... I mean, the whole thing with the germs is just... it could be something else.
Probably, yes.
Yeah, it's not a story. It's just a frame.
That's the pattern, I manifested into germs. But, it's probably something much deeper than that.
It's not yours, though. Don't you think it's not yours?
Then whose is it?
You said it. It was your dad's.
It was, yes. It's weird, mine. We have so many parts of us that logic doesn't come into it.
That's true.
And logic never comes into phobias. There's no logic. Because if we were logical, it wouldn't make sense to us.
Well, it can make sense in the funny sense of way that we were talking about things.
Well, in that way, yes. Yeah. I mean, I know my germ thing is my friends love to laugh.
Do you play on that?
A little bit. Yeah, I do a little bit. But not a lot.
Not a lot because you're still not completely comfortable.
Probably. It's a good question you asked me that. I'm thinking I have a bit on it, but not a lot.
So here's a gauge. When you completely play on the entire thing, you're closer, you're like healing more. The less you play on it, maybe there is more to work on it.
I actually think that phobias and things like that, and people who don't have phobias, by the way, never understand it. They think it's like a fear. And I say... Fear. I have fear of the dentist, but I will still go to the dentist. But if I had a phobia of the dentist, all my teeth would fall out because I would never go.
But you know where the fear comes in the thing, the fear, when people say it's fear, or at least when I'm thinking, because I thought about it there, but I didn't say it. I was like,
yes,
maybe you say it. You did. It's maybe the fear of losing control.
It is all about control and so many phobias.
No, but the fear of losing the control. It's not about the control itself.
No, I know. So many phobias, I believe, are with that fear of losing control. Yeah. That's why I've got to go and be in control. And, you know, and it's nonsense. And I know that, but I got to do it. Yeah. I mean, I don't have to do it.
Yeah.
But then I will sit for 15 hours.
Do you know there is a skit of Bob Newhart? Do you know when this woman comes into his office and he tells her, well, we're giving you a 5 minutes consultation goes to go to $5. I don't give you change. And she starts telling you about all these fears. And he says, listen, I'm going to give you two words. These are going to help you. So she starts taking the note. No. Usually people remember these two words and tell her, stop it. And then he goes, stop. And then he goes to wash his hands and stuff like that. And she tells him, yes, and I'm also germophobic. Oh, no, that's okay. I'm too.
Yeah.
So that's...
But they also say that phobias, they come from childhood.
Yeah.
Because it's the child that would determine this. And it's a protection against something, usually. Because it's...
So that's why I ask you, what would happen? What are you afraid of happening?
Well, exactly. What are you protecting? On that one, I never want to delve too much.
Okay.
Everything else, I'm right. But that one, I never, it's like, no, just let me clean the airplane or whatever. They should pay me.
Should pay to clean the airplane?
Yeah, I'm disinfect. Well, I only do my seat and if my husband's with me, his seat. But you know what?
But you're cleaning it for the next 10 people.
I always think about that. The person on the flight back should be thanking me.
You should leave a note.
Yes.
Caroline Langford sat here. Yes. I cleaned it.
It's disinfected.
This chair is clean. I disinfected Caroline Langford. It's like a political
statement.
And then
they can charge more for that seat, yeah, you see. Yeah. It's sterile.
They can make the seat smaller so it's closer to that seat.
A whole business. I think I'll contact El Al.
So you fly usually just when you go to Israel?
I prefer because you get on and you get off.
Yes.
I've done the other ways and then it just makes it so much longer, you know.
Yeah,
2 hour wait, changing terminals.
So back to, I wanted to ask because we went off and off. Back to this, so Leo was in a kibbutz.
He was on a kibbutz. I mean, I would visit him and see him. And I lived in New York and he'd come to New York for the summer.
I just want to explain, if you don't know what a kibbutz is, if you're listening, it's a community, a socialist community style that started with the beginning of the country, with the birth of the country.
Yes.
And it's basically that you live, nothing belongs to you. It belongs to everybody. Everybody owns everything. So there is nobody has a car or a house. It's everybody living in a commune, and it's all shared. And so are the children. And so there is a children's house where the kids would sleep there, and then the parents would sleep maybe a 5 minutes walk, or depends on the. And everybody would meet for breakfast in the main dining hall, and so forth. And so what Lior, I understand, happened, there was a foster family in the kibbutz that maybe didn't have children or had children. And
they eventually actually, like a couple of years later, did have, which today it's his brother and sister. But yeah, he was in the baby house, the kid's house.
So to correct the Jewish journal, you guys need to correct that because that's what they
he
said.
He was not adopted. Adopted is something else entirely. Of course, and thank goodness he wasn't. And and I am his mom.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he calls me mum and mum. Yeah, and Ima sometimes, but mostly mum. And, you know, thank goodness I'm sitting here today talking about it. But this is important, and I always feel that when I talk about postpartum depression in English, in England they call it postnatal, that because I always feel like when I'm talking, maybe there's some woman going through a very hard time.
Yes.
It is the most awful, awful thing. The shame of it. And you think that you're not normal. And it's very common what can happen. You know, and I say, if anyone ever feels in any way they've had a baby and they're just not feeling right, go and get help. If only I had known what it was, I could have got help, and all of this wouldn't have happened.
It wasn't as, was it as accessible, treatment as accessible at that time?
Well, it was, but no one knew about it.
Mm, yeah.
Not in Israel.
Yeah, in Israel it was.
I found out several years later when I was in New York, I met a woman who, and it was the same symptoms as mine, but her husband had said, look, something's not right with you, let's go to the doctor. And it took her 6 months, and then she was happy, you know. Mine, my son, I didn't raise. And
yeah.
very hard time.
Yeah. And again, that's the environment, right? The environment we're in, the environment we surround ourselves with. Whether it is, now the doctor is more of a technical thing, but the environment around, the people around us that, and in Israel at that time, people weren't as aware of their health.
No,
and I
think what was always hard for me in Israel, and don't get me wrong, I absolutely love Israel and it's my home.
Yeah,
but
no.
My second home or whatever.
Good for you.
But I always had a very hard time in Israel because I didn't fit into the box of how a woman should be, how a mother should be. I never did and I never will. I've always been different from everybody else. I don't do well with rules in the sense you tell me I've got to do this, I will.
So here's a question about rules, right? Mm-hmm. The way you said it is I don't do good about rules when you tell me you have to do that.
Yes.
So now, a woman in the 70s or 80s in Israel, mm-hmm. very yet still and still is very chauvinistic, very mm-hmm. patriarchy.
Yeah.
Right. Here comes you, and you also bring the very shyness. So usually, when you're in that and you want to please everybody, you're just smiling. Then you accept it on yourself many mm-hmm. times. How did that, and now you are here. So there was a difficulty as a woman.
Very much
in
so.
In Israel and...
Very much so. You know, even today, because I don't fit in any... Look, I come from nowhere and I come from everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like I have friends in Israel that are American and they've got other American friends. They've got... I'm English, I'm Australian, I'm Israeli, now I'm here, I don't even know where I'm from and who I am. And so I never fit in that way. I never fitted in, I'm not the typical woman that likes fashion and handbags and shoes. I can't stand, I'm a bit of a hippie myself. I don't fit in that way. I don't fit in any particular box. And so some people don't like that. I don't filter a lot when I speak, even though I'm British. I mean, I have manners, but I say what I think.
Yeah.
And that can be hard. Here in America, it's hard because you don't just, in LA.
Yeah, well, you can. It just, then they just, oh, mother.
Or, you know, so it's always been hard. But I think I'm now at an age where this is who I am. And it's okay.
No, it's wonderfully okay. But and our journey here is really to get out of the box, you know.
Well, I've been out my whole life,
yeah.
And I'm not getting in.
Yeah,
it's not going to happen.
And many times we grow up in these situations where we feel, you know, I grew up in. My dad was the chief of police of Tel Aviv.
Ooh.
In the Shaon.
Yes,
they filmed the Shoter Azulay in his office.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it was a very
strict,
right? And then at 14, also they became ultra orthodox.
Did you?
Oh, no, they
did.
Became.
And what about you?
I had to follow suit, but it was really I hated everything about that. So religion was really kind of shoved down my throat. So I didn't want to do anything with any religion, anything. It's not Judaism, nothing. And so I start wandering around, you know.
Wandering Jew.
Different clubs, you know. I was in different clubs, let's put it this way. And but you know, in this age and coming to Israel and being also that shy and getting this yoke, sort of almost like a yoke.
Yeah, and also we grew up again without any sort of real structure. We knew we were Jewish. That was it.
Yeah.
But we celebrated Christmas, you know. Well. I mean, but it was like, why are we going to Israel? Because we're Jewish. What do you mean?
Where?
And then a few years after I was 14, my brother was 16, and a few years later, he went religious.
Hmm.
My brother, he went from the most extreme to extreme, but he's a Kabbalist.
Hmm.
There's a difference.
Hmm, yeah.
And has been.
Where is he in Tzfat?
No, he is in Tel Aviv, you know, area. And and he's very, very talented glass artist.
Oh, glass artist.
His
oh,
work
wow.
is, you can see it in the Cotterill.
What's his name?
Jeremy Langford.
Jeremy Langford.
Yeah, it's Langford Art Glass. Amazing.
Oh, Langford
stuff.
Art Glass in Jerusalem.
All over in LA as well.
Oh, wonderful,
I mean, all over
wonderful.
The world. And I'm not just saying it because he's my brother.
And also, if you say it, it's okay, but
not
say the
other
way.
No, I'm not that type.
Oh, okay, okay.
And, you know, his work is amazing. And he has been observant, shall we say, for the last 40 years, you know. So I have a lot of nieces and nephews that are. When I visit Israel, when I go to them on Shabbat, I dress accordingly.
Yeah, yeah, I can understand. Yes. Like, I don't know, knees, no, yeah, yeah, yes. for sure, I get that.
My spirituality has always been animals.
So you connect with the animals.
I have connected since, and probably from when I was a little girl, I felt good around animals. My father was...
Any particular animals?
All animals. Oh, apart from snakes and things like that. But I'm the happiest... I really am the happiest when I'm around animals, and when there's green fields and or the sea, but mostly green hills and nature. And
yeah.
I like growing. I grow vegetables.
Oh, you do! Oh, that's
yes.
wonderful.
And which is lovely here in the valley. You can
grow
all year round,
oh, that's
and
great.
I love eating from the garden.
So you work the land with your hands?
Well, I'm not with my feet, darling.
No, no. So, you know, because it releases toxins that actually makes a person happy when you actually put your hands in the soil.
Well, then that's good.
That's why you also...
Yeah. And just being, you know, and I've always had a thing with animals. I've got a few in my house. And
what do you have?
I have two fat bulldogs.
Fat bulldogs?
Yes.
Why the emphasis on the... They just eat a lot or they're just...
Well, first of all, they do, but bulldogs anyway are fat. But mine are, you know... I'm a very Jewish mother with my dogs.
lucky dog.
And then I have... You may laugh, but they're very, very tame. Two guinea pigs.
Oh, really? Usually they're afraid. You know, a guinea pig, I say guinea pig, it's like... I'm scared, I'm hungry, don't kill me. That's their life essence.
No, not these... Every morning when I, because they know what they're getting, I come in with a head of lettuce. They're well taken care of. They're up, they're squeaking, they're ready. Where's the lettuce? You know, I begin the day with feed the dogs then. And so nothing actually gets thrown away in our house because leftovers, like any of the veggies.
They eat it.
You know, you're peeling a cucumber.
They eat it.
They eat it. And any of the other stuff, believe me, my dogs will eat it.
Oh, wow.
And then there's a
good.
Husband, too. Oh, he'll eat it, too.
So when is your next show? We're about to... yeah. So we're...
Wow.
Yeah.
Time passes when you're having fun.
We have to... Yeah, we have to live in a few minutes. So tell me, where's your next show?
Oh, I have several, but I've got one coming up... on February 6th.
Yeah, that's I didn't interest it. Probably that.
Yes, with the very talented Mindy Rickles, who is the daughter of the legendary comic Don Rickles.
Oh, wow.
And she's so funny.
Okay, that'd be fun.
And that's on February 6th at the IAC Sheffer Center.
Oh, on the Soto, not the Soto, on...
It's gone from... Winnetka.
On Winnetka Avenue.
Yes.
The IAC Sheffer. Okay,
yes.
Cool. All right. That's
yes.
wonderful.
Yeah, in Woodland Hills. So that would be fun. I don't have to drive far.
Yeah, that's right. It's a collab.
Yes. And it's in English.
It is in English. Okay.
It is in English.
Okay. What did you do in the army? Were you in the Israeli army?
No, but I did the movie Banot, which is all
about
the army.
Yes, yes. That's right.
I actually did a year where I sang to soldiers.
Oh, so you were... Okay. So.
I just went from camp to camp, from tank to tank.
Yeah.
And they didn't care. These guys didn't care what I sang.
They
you know,
just
this blonde, blue-eyed girl turned up. Sing whatever you want, darling.
Yeah,
it's
whatever.
Okay.
It's okay.
It's all right.
Oh, I messed up enough. That's okay. You're perfect.
Yeah. They didn't care, but they were happy to see me.
and then you went. And your dad helped build the first Israeli station?
Well, he turned up. It was only a few years. And then suddenly the Yom Kippur War broke out. I didn't speak a word of Hebrew. They went, you'll run it now. By the way, until the day he died, 40 years, he didn't speak a word of Hebrew.
Really? And he ran the Israeli Hebrew station? Yes. Wow.
That tells you something, doesn't it?
It was a great, whatever the TV was, one channel.
Yes.
But it was so valuable.
Oh, it was.
At those times. It was amazing.
But that's also why our movies did so well, because Israeli movies did well, because you wanted to go and you only had one station. So.
Oh, we can talk to you forever. So, CarolineLangford.com, is that right?
CarolineLangford.com.
Caroline,
yes,
with the C, C-A-R-L-O-I-N-E, Langford. Caroline, thank you so much for showing up and bringing your energy here and your laughter and your joy and everything. It's so beautiful.
Thank you for having me. It was lovely.
It was lovely. Thank you for being, for experiencing, for being you. And I encourage you to look inside. What are you afraid of? You're so great. And here we are. Have a wonderful day. And I'll talk to you next week. Liron Ben Shimon.
צורם וקולך מפייס מנפץ מחסומים איתנים מזרזת זרימה של דם של זימה טורפת את כל הקלפים צמחים מטפסים על קירות תאומים גם אני מחפשת מקום שצמח אם אין בי מלבד שממה בתוכי אולי תני לי רק עוד פיסה בה אם את אמיתית תגישו כי מאסתי באותם כיסופים הלילה צעיר אך נפשי די לאה מלתהות על אותם קנקנים
You're listening to Abracadabra, Create What You Speak, with Ilan Azulay, only on